On this week's 51%, she's considered a gender barrier disruptor on the high seas.
Deep inside is an activist, dressed in CEO clothing.
Plus, a new identity and new motherhood are a lot to shoulder. I'm Allison Dunn, and this is 51%.
How deep is the ocean? How high is the sky?
Lisa Ludolf Perlo is the first and only woman to lead one of Royal Caribbean's cruise line brands. She's also responsible for hiring the industry's first American female captain of a cruise ship. Ludolf Perlo, who was appointed the first woman president and CEO of Celebrity Cruises in December 2014, was awarded an Eleanor Roosevelt Valkill Medal for her role as a gender barrier disruptor and equity and diversity promoter. Dr. Sharon Ufberg interviewed Ludolf Perlo shortly before the October Valkill Medal ceremony at the Eleanor Roosevelt Home in Hyde Park, New York. Ufberg asked how Ludolf Perlo got to where she is.
It was a long and windy road, and it started 35 years ago when I started at the very beginning and probably at the very bottom, or pretty close to the bottom, as a district sales manager where I'm from in New England. I spent 17 years in sales and then had an opportunity after that to move into the marketing organization, which was probably the first big change in my career that ended up being the catalyst to why I'm here talking to you today as the first woman in our C-suite and the first president and CEO of one of our corporate brands. I have done most every position in the company, so it's given me a really great breadth of experience, and it's something that I tell people, and especially women all the time, that paths aren't always linear, that you should be open to trying new things and flexible to gain as much experience as you can, because I believe that you become a more valuable asset to your company and also to your career as you build it, in having many different experiences that help you end up knowing an industry even better than you ever thought you would. And then finally, 30 years into my career, in December of 2014, I was promoted into this position as president and CEO of Celebrity Cruises.
So, you know, this maritime world has always been so very male-dominated. You know, how has being a woman affected your role as CEO in this maritime industry?
Well, it's really interesting that we are having this conversation today because it happens to be the United Nations World Maritime Day, and the theme of this year's Maritime Day is empowering women in the maritime industry. And that, for me, couldn't be a more appropriate theme for this year and pretty much every year's Maritime Day, because only 2% of the people working in the maritime industry are women. There are a lot of different reasons for that. Number one is we probably haven't paid as much attention as we should over the last years. Another is that there are not enough women who are opting in for these careers. But the thing that's most exciting about me being a woman in this role in the maritime industry is that I have had the opportunity, because I feel a tremendous responsibility and obligation, and also see a huge opportunity to significantly increasing the number of women that work in our maritime organization. And over the last 3 years, Patrick and Manolis, the two men that happen to run our marine organization, have helped me increase the number of women on our bridge from 3% to over 22%. And that is a great achievement, and we will continue to make strides in balancing our gender equation here at Celebrity.
I know one of the other things that you have done is you brought on the first American woman ship captain. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so that's a really wonderful and lovely story, and one that I will never forget that I had the opportunity to do. I have two important stories, and I'll start with the first, which you just mentioned, which is Captain Kate. Captain Kate McHugh I met in a different role in our company, and she was a staff captain. She was the highest rated staff captain in 13 contracts and had still not been promoted to captain. And I left the Royal Caribbean brand before that ended up happening for Kate. And I remember when I got into this role, I talked to Patrick, who had come with me to run Celebrity Marine, and talked about how wonderful Kate was and that it would be really terrific as the first woman president and CEO here in the company to hire the first woman captain. And so Captain Kate is not only the first woman captain ever for Celebrity, she's the first American woman in, a captain in the world, and still to this day, almost 4 years later. So I was so excited when Patrick told me that her answer to our invitation was, hell yes. And she has told me on numerous occasions that I have made all her dreams come true. And for me, that's one of the greatest pleasures that I have in my position. And I think it's also important to mention that we also hired the first African woman to ever work on the bridge of a cruise ship, Nicolene from the Ghana Maritime Academy. And Black women, as you can imagine, did not have opportunity, and the Ghana Maritime Academy was not recognized by our International Maritime Organization. And for 1 year, Patrick worked tirelessly to get the Ghana Maritime Academy approved. And 13 months after I met Nicolene, I met her on the bridge of the Celebrity Equinox. And she is another big and important first in our industry and for our brand.
That's so exciting. I know that you personally had some other exciting achievement awards recently. Can you share about this Eleanor Roosevelt Award of Achievement for Gender Equality? I think it's so inspiring to hear about that.
Thank you, Sharon. Being recognized for what I do is just a lovely thing that is not, you know, part of my motivation for what I do. But when I got the call that I had been nominated for an Eleanor Roosevelt Val Kill Award, which is all about people of influence working for social justice, and I was one of the people that they selected for that. It was a surreal moment for me, and when I have taken a look back at all of the recipients of this award, it's really humbling. It's all around the things that Eleanor Roosevelt stood for and did to ensure that everybody felt equal and everybody had opportunity. She was wise. She was before her time. She's probably the most wonderful first ladies ever in the history of our country. And the people that I'm being awarded with are really special. One of them is Chelsea Clinton, and her mom, Hillary, is introducing Chelsea, so I get to meet both of them on that day, and I thought it only appropriate that Captain Kate introduce me. So thank you for mentioning that. It really is a lovely honor, and I'm quite humbled and proud by it.
It's such an inspiration to hear your story, and I would love to ask you what advice you might give other women who want to be at the top of their industry, who want to break through and be the first to achieve the kinds of things that you have. What advice would you give them?
So the advice that I have lived by myself, I always feel like if you're going to give people advice, it's you should live by the same rules that you share with others that you think would be helpful to them. And one of the things that has motivated me probably since I was a little girl, and certainly throughout my career, is that when I hear a no, it motivates me to turn it into a yes. And one of the stories I tell is that I actually asked for my president and CEO role 3 times. I felt that my career was an exemplary career in which I had done so many different things throughout the organization and had exceeded every expectation that was ever put on whatever role I had. I led in a way that was inspiring and achieved great results. And when the president and CEO opportunity presented itself a couple of different times throughout the 2 years before I actually was appointed to this position, I asked our chairman and CEO for the job 3 times. And he told me no twice and finally said yes. And I think that takes courage. First of all, it takes courage to ask for what you want. Women don't do it as well as men or as often as men. And it's really hard to come back and keep asking when you've been told no, and certainly when you've been told no twice. But what I say is never give up, turn a no into a yes, and use no as a motivation to achieve what you want to achieve. And of course, you need to have the success and results behind you. But if you do and you really want something, keep going, because there's always someone that might want to stand in your way or circumstances that will stand in your way.
So, Lisa, you're at the top. So what's on the horizon for you? What's next? You know, what are you going to ask three times for in the future?
Oh, that's a good way to put that question, Sharon. Thank you. That's a good question. I am in my fifth year, and there's so much on the horizon for Celebrity. There is so much more that I want to do for this brand over and above what we, myself and the team, have already done. We have gotten the brand to a place no one ever thought it could ever get to. We have so many exciting things on the horizon. I really want to see them through. I have great ambition to leave a legacy behind that puts Celebrity in a stratosphere that it deserves. And I'm probably in the middle of that journey, I would say. Then after that, it might be time for me to just enjoy the rest of my life and think about all the things that I've wanted to do and enjoy my family more, enjoy my husband more, believe it or not, enjoy traveling more. And I think part of me, deep inside, is an activist, dressed in CEO clothing. And maybe at some point in my near future or relatively near future, I'll be able to do even more around advancing the things that are good for the world and good for women. And that's something that I'm very excited about as part of the next chapter of what I'm going to be doing.
So thank you so much for being with us today. This is Dr. Sharon Ufberg on Force of Nature for 51%.
Dr. Sharon Ufberg is co-founder of the personal development wellness company Borrowed Wisdom in California. October 11th was Day of the Girl, and New York Governor Andrew Cuomo marked it by signing legislation requiring menstrual product packages or boxes sold in the state to contain a plain and conspicuous printed list of all the ingredients in the products. And now New York is the first state in the nation to require ingredient labels on menstrual products. The legislation takes effect 180 days after it was signed, and product manufacturers will have 18 months to develop new packaging or labels with the ingredients. Assemblymember Linda Rosenthal, a Democrat from Manhattan and author of the bill, says she hopes other states follow suit with this type of disclosure law. Cuomo says the mandate will empower women to make their own decisions about what goes into or on their bodies. Sherry Holdridge talks about her grandmother's experiences during World War II, polio, and the store she opened, Osei USA. This story was created during workshops for veterans, military service members, and their families over the summer.
Who are the women who will help retain the needed manpower for the production battle at home? Who are the women who will help fight our country's war? It's Mary Jones, Jane Doe. It's the idle housewife and the girl next door. Oh, yes, it's your war too, Miss and Mrs. America.
I think all people, especially women, had to be super strong at that point in time because they were having to hold it together and even hold down the fort from a country standpoint, because they're the ones who were making the supplies and kind of keeping our economics going in America.
That's Sherry Holdridge describing the strength and fearlessness that carried many women through the home front trials during World War II, including her grandmother. Jean Singleton, known as Nana to her grandchildren, was born in 1921 in San Antonio. She was the second born of six brothers and sisters. Like many Americans at that time, they were poor. She cited that they lived in a cave and on the beach on occasion because jobs were scarce. She and her family had to be hard workers because if you didn't work hard, you didn't survive. Her grandmother volunteered in a polio ward caring for children, including her own daughter.
The National National Foundation for Infantile Paralysis was organized in 1938 to serve you in your fight against poliomyelitis, one of America's most vicious, crippling diseases. This is your war of 1949, your fight against infantile paralysis.
It was her grandmother's example of resiliency and courage that influenced Sherry most. She wanted to become like her, and her patriotism was shaped by her.
I feel a very strong connection with America and being American and all the culture that came with that from the 40s with the movie stars and the war. They made the war kind of romantic sounding, but even though I know it wasn't in reality. And then I loved that a lot of strong women were involved in our country at the time my grandmother, you know, was young. And so those stories that she shared with me influenced me as I was growing up. So I always had a very strong connection with America. When products were starting to be sent to be made overseas and seeing car plants being closed and people losing their jobs, and these are Americans and they're not at war, and we're tearing our country apart by saying we don't care about that. And then in Vietnam, of course, no one celebrated the Vietnam vets coming home. And so I felt like I wanted to do something about it.
Sherry did do something about it. In 2012, she started reaching out to manufacturers who chose not to move their operations overseas. She created the Made in America store, Oh Say USA, like the national anthem. And she did create jobs. This story was produced by Sherry Holdridge and narrated by Taylor, with assistance from Kate Murray, for Stories from Deep in the Heart, a project of Texas Folklife.
France's lower house of parliament on October 15th overwhelmingly passed a bill that aims to give single women and lesbian couples legal access to in vitro fertilization, egg freezing, and fertility medication. The assisted reproduction measures are part of a broader bioethics bill voted by the National Assembly, the lower house, where French President Emmanuel Macron's government has a majority. The bill passed 359 to 114. It must still go to the Senate for debate. France's healthcare system would cover the cost of the assisted reproduction procedures for all women under 43. French law currently allows in vitro fertilization and related procedures only for infertile heterosexual couples. Many ineligible French women travel abroad to undergo IVF treatment. Joe Duprang knows that embracing his new identity is what's right for him, but worries how it will affect his two children. Michelle Dahlenberg brings us the story.
Running away with a ukulele right now like every normal family starts their day.
Joe Duprang has two kids, 2.5-year-old Benji and 1-year-old Nora. Like any parent, Joe experiences many challenges and many joys.
The things that are really hard stay hard, just fatigue and time management and life, and boy, they keep wanting to eat. But you get acclimated to how much delight they provide, and so you don't sort of register that in the same way.
Joe tries to do what's best for the kids, but also what's best for Joe. Lately, Joe's been worrying a lot.
You know, there's part of me that thinks I am hurting my children, and I am depriving them of something, and that I'm selfish, that I'm making a mistake, that I'm going through a phase.
What are you worried you're depriving your kids of?
That ideal mother.
Growing up, Joe remembers being a tomboy with an androgynous body. Joe didn't have a big interest in dating boys or wearing makeup, figured it was just part of being a feminist. But when Joe looked in the mirror, it was hard to like or even recognize the person looking back.
And I would see my reflection in a mirror and just recoil, because that's not what I think my face looks like. That's not what I think my body looks like.
Joe just assumed these thoughts were universal, run-of-the-mill negative body image feelings that many women have. At age 29, Joe married Jeffrey, a dear childhood friend. At age 37, Joe got pregnant. Joe and Jeffrey had two kids, one right after the other. Both pregnancies triggered intense and unusual feelings for Joe.
My body was constantly changing. It was constantly becoming more womanly. And that freaked me out very much.
Breastfeeding just made it worse.
I loved the intimacy. I loved how happy he was and how, you know, how cuddly it was. But I had this visceral reaction to breastfeeding. Like every time he would latch on, I would have this wash of nausea and also of like bad feeling. What my brain said is, man, you are shoving being female in our face for the first time ever.
Finally, Joe had a clear understanding of what the problem was. Deep down, Joe didn't feel right in a female body. One day, Joe was scrolling through Instagram and learned that a favorite writer had been on testosterone for 6 months.
And he looked so happy. His eyes, oh my God. He had always looked afraid of the camera in the same way that I did. And his eyes were so open, and he looked so proud and free. And I was furious. I was like, how could you do this to me?
Joe wanted the same things, but it felt impossible.
I was like, oh no, oh no, oh no. I think I'm trans, oh no. And then I really started to reckon with what it would cost me. I mean, like, what it would take away from me. What it would do to my life.
What would it do?
I would lose Jeffrey.
So Joe buried those feelings. But Joe did take one step. Joe decided to get a short haircut. Very short.
While you know something, especially if you're an overthinker like me, like for the 30 seconds you feel confident in anything about yourself or your life, like you've got to act. So I like made an appointment for a haircut like the next day.
Afterwards, Joe was overwhelmed by the results.
And I was like chilled to the bone. I was petrified.
Joe said to the stylist,
I look like a boy. And she says, yeah, cute boy. And I said, stop encouraging me. I need this to not be a thing.
And then Joe came home.
And I remember Jeffrey looking at me, and it got cold in his eyes.
In that moment, Joe had no idea this small act, a haircut, was the beginning of the end of their romantic relationship. A year and a half later, they finally broke up. But Joe and Jeffrey decided to continue to live together as a family, just in separate bedrooms. After that, Joe felt a new freedom. The risk of losing Jeffrey was now gone. Joe adopted new pronouns, a new name, and he started taking testosterone.
I see my reflection, and I like it. I post selfies. Sometimes later I delete, but I do have that moment of feeling cute. And that never happened to me before.
So how do you identify as a parent now? Do you still identify as a mom, or how do you identify?
Yes, yeah, I've got the C-section scars, and I almost bled to death, and I'm not gonna say those things to you, but I'm your mom. And I may be your deep-voiced, pot-bellied, Danny DeVito hands-having mom. But no one can take it away from me. Please don't take it away from me. I hope no one can take it away from me. You want to give your kids the best life you can. And I cannot stand behind believing that, you know, people who do this for themselves are hurting their children. But that doesn't mean that I can't question that for myself. I've never been particularly good at or rewarded by doing what I was supposed to, so I'm just doing this.
For the Transom Traveling Workshop in Austin, Texas, I'm Michelle Dahlenberg.
This is Bird Note. Each year when the salmon are running, eagles, hawks, and ospreys flock to riverbanks across the continental Northwest to feast. Seeing so many birds together makes it easier to pick out the subtle differences in birds of the same species. For example, female raptors are often noticeably larger than males. A female bald eagle may weigh as much as 50% more than her mate. Scientists call this sexual dimorphism. Di meaning two, morph meaning shape or appearance. Differences between the sexes. In many bird species, and mammals too for that matter, it's usually males that are bigger. So, why are female raptors bigger than their male counterparts? Scientists aren't exactly sure. It may have to do with nest defense, or size advantage may help females better compete for food. Or maybe it's the females, not the males, that compete for mates. With many species of birds, plumage is often the easiest way to tell males from females. But if you see a group of raptors feasting on salmon by the river, use size as your first clue as to which are females and which are males. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein. Today's show brought to you by the Bobolink Foundation.
That's our show for this week. Thanks to Elizabeth Hill for production assistance. Our executive producer is Dr. Alan Shartok. Our theme music is Glow in the Dark by Kevin Bartlett. This show is a national production of Northeast Public Radio. If you'd like to hear this show again, sign up for our podcast or visit the 51% archives on our website at wamc.org. This week's show is number 1579.